Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Okay, last major subject tonight is inheritance. Now, we've talked about the fertilized egg, all the production of the egg, production of the sperm, fertilization, development. So the question here is, well, how does that individual inherit the characteristics they inherit? Why do they have blue eyes, brown eyes, and so forth? This certainly, of course, has to do with the DNA, just like we're talking about here, as does most everything. And we have to think back, the one thing we do know is homologous chromosomes. We already know that, homologous pairs, which I'll put right up here. Here's a gene, this is a homologous pair. Here's a gene here, here's a gene here. If it's an easy one, is eye color. Where did one of these come from in the individual? From mom. And the other from who? This is only one other choice, huh? Dad. And if they are the homologs, if this is eye color here, what's this one over here? Eye color also. A little bit of terminology first here. And first we can say, yes, this is a homologous pair. We could say these are genes that code for the same characteristic. But when we talk about inheritance, we say these are alleles. They are alleles of one another. Okay, so we can say a pair of alleles. That means two genes on the homologous chromosomes that code for the same characteristic. The location where they're found on these chromosomes here and here are said to be the loci, like location, the loci. And again, the example, an easy one, and actually coded by one pair of alleles, is eye color. Has to do with the protein that's manufactured there and how it reflects the light. And we'll say that this one here is, the eye color coded here is going to be brown. So that came from mom. And from dad, we'll say this one over here is blue. Now, how do we refer to these? In other words, how do we write these down in terms of inheritance and talking about these as inheritable characteristics? We basically pick a letter, and I'm going to pick the letter A. I'm going to make a big A, and I'm going to make a little a. And even though it's two different colors, if it's the same characteristic, you use the same letter. Okay. The big A means that the color is what's said to be dominant. The little A is then said to be what? Recessive. What that basically means is that this, the dominant trait, masks the recessive trait. Its characteristics mask this one, so you wouldn't see this one. Okay? Now, unless I tell you what's dominant, or you look it up in a book or something, you don't know just by happenstance. In this case, which one's dominant? You know, brown. Brown is the dominant one. Blue is recessive. Okay? Now, how many genes or alleles do you have? How many genes do you have to code for eye color in any individual?
Two.
So your choice of possibilities of what you could have. Well, you could get a big A and a big A. You could get a big A and a little A. Or you could get a little A and a little A, right? Those are the three possible combinations you could get from these two particular genes. A little more terminology here. If they are the same letter, if the two letters are the same, both large, like in this example, they are said to be homozygous. Is there something else here that's homozygous? What, the two little A's? So how do we differentiate between this one and this one? These are homozygous, what? Dominant? And this is then homozygous what? Recessive. Okay, the one where they are different, where you've got a big A and a little A, are heterozygous. Okay. Now, with all that in mind, we can actually calculate what the potential possibilities are of an individual inheriting these characteristics if we know what the parents are. And it's done so, relatively simply, with what is called a Punnett's square. And I guess Mr. Punnett came up with this. And definitely know how to do a Punnett's square. Basically, is a little crossboard here. Okay. And we've got a place for the potential possibilities of what the mother brings in and what the father brings in. Okay. Now, how many alleles, how many genes does mom have for eye color? Mom has two, right? Okay. Yeah, she has the homologous pairs. She got one from dad and one from mom, but she personally has two. Let's say that they are, that she is big A, big A. Okay. Let's say that dad is heterozygous, and he has two, of course, also, right? So he'd be what? Big A, little A, right? Okay. So you put mom's, and it doesn't matter either way, mom's across here, here's her two, here's her pair of alleles, here's dad's over here, pair of alleles. And you just kind of cross-reference this. You put this is a big A from dad as a potential possibility. These are four possible outcomes of this mating. Big A, big A. Big A, big A. Big A, little A. Big A, little A. Okay? Those are the four possible combinations that come from this mating. Now, if the big A, which is dominant, which is brown, masks the little A, what will 100% of these people look like? What color will be their eyes? It'll be brown. And That is referred to the visual appearance, the expressed color, is called the phenotype. Okay? That is the phenotype. What does it look like? What do you see? Okay? The phenotype. In this case, it's 100% brown. Or you can say, we'll see something different later, but the phenotypic ratio is 1. Now, they all look the same, but are the genes the same? No, the genetic combinations are not. That is called the genotype. It means really what genes are in there. The types of genes that are in there. That's the genotype. And what's the genotypic ratio? How many of these are there? 2. How many of these are there? 2. So it's 2 to 2 or 1 to 1 as you reduce it. So we'd say it's 1 to 1. In percentages, you could say it's 50% or 50-50 also. And you can talk percentage, but you should know phenotypic ratios and genotypic ratios. Okay. Let's do another one here. Let's say mom had been big A, little a, and again, what would her phenotype be? What would be the color you see for with this? With this would be brown, and the phenotype here would be what? Would be brown. Two people with brown eyes, right? Okay. Again, big A, big A, big A, little a, big A, little a. And what's the last one here? Little a, little a. Okay? Now, the phenotype here. How many are going to have brown eyes? 3 of them. So the phenotype here is 3 to what? To 1. And what is the genotypic ratio here? How many of these are there? 1. How many heterozygous are there? 2. And how many homozygous recessive are there? 1. So the genotypic ratio is 1 to 2 to 1. Okay? This is basically how you figure out the percentages, how you figure the chances are of getting any particular characteristic. As I say, as far as dominant and recessive goes, you have to know what's dominant and recessive. And I say brown over blue, each time you'd have to be told that to know what was going on. The lab exercise, by the way, on Wednesday is to do these. In other words, there's some sample ones, they're in the lab book. And we are going to do 4 of them, and hopefully by the time this, it's sort of simple, but by the time you're done doing those 4, you certainly ought to be able to know them well enough to do them if they showed up on the exam, for example, right? Okay, good.
Can you tell again why it's the phenotype is 3 to 1?
How many brown-eyed individuals are there, or the possibilities of having brown eyes? Would this individual have brown eyes? Would this one? This is dominant. Brown is dominant. It masks this the recessive trait here. It masks it. Physically masks it. Is this one brown eyes? Yep. Right. So 1, 2, 3, 2. This one will have what color? Blue eyes. There's no brown to mask the blue color. Okay? Now, all of this was figured out in the mid-1800s by a gentleman named Gregor Mendel M-E-N-D-E-L. I'll bet everybody's heard of that. And we're going to talk about Mendel's laws of inheritance and talk a little bit about how he figured this out. In other words, how he came to his conclusions, which is really strange because he was able to do this mid-1800s. He did it mathematically. He knew nothing about genetics. He knew nothing about chromosomes, genes, or anything else. He did he figured mathematically. He looked at plants and said, well, there's so many of these and so many of these, it must work this way, and came up with exactly our laws of inheritance today, long before anything was known about any of this stuff. So rather amazing mathematical analysis and kind of a real step forward in science. Okay. What he did, this he was a monk. He, I don't care about that, lived in a monastery. I guess he was the gardener. And he had nothing better to do for 40 years than to look at pea plants. In other words, as a monk, there wasn't much to do there, you know. So anyway, so he's working with pea plants, and all of these the work he did was in pea plants. And by the way, pea plants have a mom and a dad. There's the pollen, and there's the flower. So it works just like we do. It is a sexually reproducing organism with a mom and a dad. So characteristics would be exactly the same. Now, his experiments, what he was looking at, seven characteristics of these pea plants. He looked at the color of the flowers, which were different. And he looked at the peas, and the color of those were different. And some were wrinkled and some were round of the peas, so that was different. He picked out seven characteristics. And he said, you know, they're different on these different plants. These are wrinkled, these are round. And he said, these are distinctly different characteristics. And I wonder why or how these come into being. Why does this plant have this type of pea and another one something else? He also thought if he could figure that out, then he could actually get the color flower he wanted. Now, if he could get this all, you know, organized, he could mate different ones and know what to expect as far as the offspring went. Okay, the first thing he did, and there's two generations of his experiments. Well, the first one's called the F1 generation. The second one is called the F2 generation. And by the way, when working with a single characteristic, as we're going to first here, this is called a hybrid cross, H-Y-B-R-I-D. This is a hybrid cross. Okay, in his F1 generation, the parents for this, the mom and dad, he used true breeding plants. In other words, those that are homozygous. One homozygous dominant and one homozygous recessive. Okay? So let's say mom was homozygous dominant. What would be her two? And let's use the letters that he used. Let's talk about this. This was in German, so therefore the letters are a little odd here, but as he was German. Is the two choices were the peas could have white flowers or they can have purple flowers. Using here the letter W, And purple is dominant. W. White is recessive. So what is it? It's a small W. So therefore, if mom was homozygous dominant, what are the two alleles she has? Big W, big W. If dad was homozygous recessive, excuse me, what two letters did he have? Little W, little W. So let's go through this. What are the four possible offspring here? What is it? Big W, little W, big W, little W, big W, little W, and big W, little W, okay? All the offspring are heterozygous, okay? That was his F1 generation. What color did they look like? What color did were the flowers of every one of them? Purple. What is the phenotypic ratio here? 1. What is the genotypic ratio here? 1. That's it. Okay, good. Now the F2 generation, I'll put it down here, were to cross the offspring of the F1 generation. So he took the offspring here, all the same, all heterozygous, and he had a big W, little W, big W, little W. Okay, just so everybody's got it, what are the results here? What's this one? Two big W's. Next. Big W, little. Big W, little. And two little W's. This is like the example we just used a minute ago when I was talking about eye color here. Okay, but good to go over it again. What is the what's the phenotypic ratio here? 3 to 1. 3 of what color? Of the purple. Okay, phenotypic 3 to 1, and the genotypic ratio is what? What genes? 1 to 2 to 1. That's exactly what genes are in it, okay? 1 to 2 to 1. Now, last question about this, over here in his F1 generation, could he tell what the genotype here was by looking at the flower? It's a little W, little W. What color is this? White. Is there any other possibility of a combination here other than little W, little W? No. So you can tell. You can say just by looking at it, you say, hey, that's white. It has to be the two recessive traits. Over here, did it have to be, what color is this right here? This purple. Does it have to be big W, big W? Now, it could also be big W, little W. So, how did he figure that out? He had what is called a test cross. Okay, a test cross. And how he could figure this, one of the parents here, you had to be able to look at and know what it was. What would that one be? The white, right? And the letters would be what? Little W, little W. That one you could tell. The other one you're not sure of. But if you do this test cross, if it happens to be big W, big W, everybody's got the idea of this stuff, right? Of how to do this? Okay. What will 100% of the individuals look like? You do 500 of them, everyone will be purple. You could say it's big W, big W. You know it is homozygous dominant. Because if it were heterozygous, what would the results be? Half of them would be what? Would be white, half purple, half white. So by looking at the offspring and testing that one over there, you could then say, okay, if they're all purple, then it's homozygous dominant, and that's what he used for his F1 generation. Okay? Thousands. In other words, basically for these tests, 1,000. It would be that 750 turn out looking purple. And he just 40 years he did this, and just over and over and over. Okay. Now, what he said to himself, because they knew nothing about what the parents contained. We say, oh well, there's two genes, a pair of alleles here, and so forth, because we know that. But he didn't. It would have been perfectly illogical to say that there's one factor from each parent. You know, the purple one's purple, and the white one's white. You know, that there's just one factor. But if there were only one factor, just one factor, and your combinations always had to be this and this, could you ever get a white flower? No, you could never get a white. So he says to himself, after doing this, he said, you know what? There must be two factors involved. In other words, it can't be one. Each parent must bring two factors to the party for it to end up with this 1-to-2-to-1 relationship as far as genotypic and 3-to-1 as far as phenotypic, okay? Because you just couldn't do it if each only had one factor involved, one gene, which is what we call it now. Okay, this is, he based on this, these experiments, he came up with his first law of inheritance. It's Mendel's first law. Yeah, M, like in Mickey. It's a Mickey Mouse, I guess. Yeah, M, Mendel. Have you heard of Gregor Mendel? It's so famous. Mendel's Laws of Inheritance. Anyway, his first law is the law of segregation. The law of segregation. And what he's really describing here, we're going to do it somewhat in his words, but he's describing meiosis. Without knowing anything about genes, chromosomes, anything, he basically very accurately described the process of meiosis. He said, and again, translated from the German, I don't speak German that well, you probably don't understand German that well, so in English, when gametes are formed, gametes being what? You don't have to write this. Just aware of the egg and the sperm, right? When the gametes are formed, two distinct factors separate and pass into separate gametes. I'm going to go back over this. I'll draw it on the board in a minute. Two distinct factors separate and pass into separate gametes. Okay? And as I say, we'll go over this. I'll draw it up on the board here in a second. The rest of this is each gamete then possesses only one factor. For each characteristic. Each new plant thus receives one factor from each parent. So what he's describing here, as I say, is meiosis. It's exactly what he's talking about. It said, when gametes are formed, here's the original parent. Here's the two factors, which this is the original parent. We now call them what? We know they're called what? Genes or alleles. As we talk about them as the pair that matches each other, we'd say they're alleles. So today, he called them factors, we'd say they're alleles. One factor passes into each of the gametes, the egg or the sperm. One factor. One here, one here. This is meiosis one, the separation of what? The homologous pairs, right? One factor here, one factor there, into the egg or the sperm. Each gamete then possesses only one factor for each characteristic, and each new plant thus receives, here's the new plant, gets one from one parent, that's that gene, and one from the other, that's that one, okay? This is the law of segregation, because what he's saying is these factors segregate out, one here, one there. Okay, the law of segregation, first law of Mendel's of inheritance, and again, as I say, describes meiosis. He made a couple assumptions, and he was actually kind of very lucky, to tell you the truth. He made the assumption that the alleles, that these factors or alleles are discrete and do not blend. You don't get it. You don't mix a white and a purple and kind of get a lavender. That they're discrete. It's either going to be white or it's going to be purple. Later, we are going to talk about some exceptions. And as I say, he was very lucky. Seven characteristics of pea plants. What if he'd have picked roses? If you take a white rose and a red rose, what do you get? You get a pink rose, okay? So there are exceptions we'll talk about a little bit later, of which that's one. So he was real lucky. He picked a plant where these things work just right, just absolutely correct. He also made the supposition that each gamete, the sperm of the egg, has an equal chance of getting either allele. Got a 50-50 chance of getting this one or of getting that one. What process in meiosis makes it that you get an equal chance, an equal shot at either one? Something, a process of meiosis, prophase one, what? The crossing over. It means that there's an equal chance of getting either one, not preference to the mom or the dad of the original parent. Okay. His second law of inheritance is called the law of independent assortment. Mendel's second law, the law of independent assortment. What he said here, his next question, or another question, was, if there's two factors in each individual, and there's different characteristics, like there's characteristics here, let's say eye color. Let's say the eye color is blue. This is for us, not a plant. And there's another set of factors or alleles down here that code for hair color. And let's say the hair color is blonde. If you have blue eyes, are these connected? If you have blue eyes, do you always get blonde hair? Right, the answer is no. Is there a relationship between this and this? If you get one, do you automatically get the other? Okay? Or do they assort independently? Is this irrelevant to this one? Okay? What he did here was called a dihybrid cross, meaning crossing two characteristics instead of one, like we just did before, flower color. As far as to what you will have to do, or should be able to do, let me put it that way, in the future, is you only have to know a hybrid cross. You don't have to do a dihybrid cross like I'm about to do. But that involves, if we're talking that, and here let me use his, he used the peas here, and were they round or wrinkled, were they yellow or green? Two characteristics of peas in pea plants. Big W was round. Little W is wrinkled. In the color category, big G is yellow, and little G is green. A dihybrid cross means we're talking about two sets of characteristics. There are 16 possible combinations of the offspring. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Now, he did the same thing. He had the F1 generation and the F2, and not to go through each one here, I'll just show you this. These will be, in other words, if it is a homozygous dominant in terms of characteristics here versus homozygous recessive, we end up with a big W and a big G, and that's all the way across, and we end up over here with what? A little W and a little G. Okay, the resultant individuals will be big W, little W, what's there? Big G, little G, okay? Heterozygous for both characteristics. Will that be the same in all 16 spots? Yeah, so we won't bother with doing all those 16 spots. So what we've got is all big W, little W, big G, little G. Now the possible offspring here are, you could have big W, big G, you could have big W, little G, you could have big G, big G, little W, and what's my little on that? And you could have little W, little G, okay? And again, and it's the same over here. This is the same idea. They were all the offspring were the same. I should put the W first here. Big G. There we are. And we can say this one, of course, will be big W, big W, big G, big G. This one, big W, big W, big G, little G. Everybody got the idea how you go about this. The last one, we'll take the extremes here. What's the one down here going to be? Little W, little G, little G. Homozygous recessive, this one here. Okay? So he does this, and he comes up his results. when all was said and done, was 9 out of the 16 appeared round and yellow. Round and yellow, 9 of them. 3 of them out of the 16 were round and green. 3 out of the 16 were wrinkled and yellow. And 1 out of the 16 was wrinkled and green. A phenotypic ratio of 9 to 3 to 3 to 1. 9 to 3 to 3 to 1. Here's the 1, right? Okay. Now, so he looks back at this and he says, well, if my idea was that if these were linked, if I had a round, that I'd always have a yellow, right? Or that if it was wrinkled, it would always be green. Is that the case? If they're round, are they always yellow? Nope. There are 3 of them, round and green. So just that alone, the fact that they all weren't the same throughout the whole bunch of them, prove the fact that a pair of alleles here assorts independently of a pair of alleles down here. And that is the law of independent assortment. That's great. And these are the laws of inheritance that we still use today. This is our standard way of figuring this stuff out and standardly what we talked about. But, as I mentioned before, are there exceptions to this? Yeah, and there's lots of them. There are many, many exceptions to these basics. I'm sort of going to mention 3 of them. I'm going to specifically mention 2 and talk about a generalization about a third. First of all, the one exception called incomplete dominance. This we already talked about, actually. This is the idea. You take a white rose and you take a red rose and you get what? A pink rose. The dominance is not complete. The red doesn't dominate the white. So that's incomplete dominance. Another exception is it's called multiple alleles. Multiple alleles. And it's talking about multiple alleles within a species, within a population, not for an individual. For any individual in a population, how many alleles do they have? They have the homologous pair. How many alleles, how many genes do they have for any characteristic? 2. One from mom, one from dad. But within a population, a species, there may be another allele out there. There may be 4 alleles out there. And a good example of this is blood type. In humans, yeah, you're either going to be A, B, or O, right? You can have an A and you can have an O. You can have a B or you can have an O. So we could have, you could have an A here and you could have an O here. Okay, those are the 2 you have. But in the population, within the species, there is also a 3rd allele, which is B. Okay? And it kind of boils down, if you get an A and an A, you're a what?
A.
If you get an A and an O, you're a what? You're an A. If this happens to be the B, if you have a B and a B, you've got a what? You're B. A B and an O, you've got a what? You're a B. If you've got an A and a B, you're a what? A B. And if you've got an O and an O, you're a what? O. Three alleles. You only get two, but in the population, there are not necessarily just two for any characteristic out there in the world. Okay, multiple alleles. Lastly, and I'm not going to give examples. I have a few here, but I'm not going to give examples of this. It was just that last idea that of independent assortment. That the characteristic here has nothing to do with the characteristic of this pair of alleles here. They are not related to each other. It was true for his pea plants and the characteristics he looked to in his pea plants, but it is very much not true in many organisms. In humans, many characteristics, I might almost say most, are not determined by one allelic pair. They are determined by more than one. Now, eye color, one pair. Hair color, one pair. But many characteristics are the products of multiple proteins and therefore multiple allelic pairs. They're not just determined by one thing. The idea of aging. We say it's coded in our genes for the cells to die over a period of kind of a given period of time. And if it were just one pair of genes, one pair of alleles, it would sort of be simple. I mean, if you wanted to have somebody live eternally, if it was just this pair right here, here and here, and to do with age, you could change the code of that, change the sequence, and make somebody live forever. It is thought, again, I spent a little time working with a group that was working on this problem, or on this situation, I should say, and it appears that there's at least 24 genetic pairs or allelic pairs involved. 24. It's the interaction of those that gives us our process of aging. So it's not as simple as changing one, you know, making the eye color different. They kind of talked about it in that movie. They said for complex traits like intelligence, what was the other one? They had intelligence and athletic performance. These are complex traits which involve more than one allelic pair. You can't just change one gene and take care of it. Okay, so that's the generalization of it. Good. Anybody got any questions about inheritance? Okay, we are going to do, as I say, make sure you know how to do a pun and square. I'll just say on the upcoming exam, it's an important portion of it.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love